All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, October 27th. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis
from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short here to get you started. Keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. Yeah, both and or, that's the right saying. DFSR.com/NBA will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That's going to cover you for NFL. It's going to cover you for NBA, all the sites and you know, FanDuel, DraftKings, all the sites, all the sports that we offer are covered under one subscription blanket. So you don't need to worry about having it sectioned off by, you know, who wrote it or, you know, this guy's plays you're paying for. You're just paying for everything that we offer on the site is under one subscription package. Our users seem to like that and appreciate it. And we think you will too. So head on over, grab a free 3-day trial and get yourself started. And I think you'll be happy with the product. All right. Week 8 in the NFL is, not all that exciting. There's just a lot of teams on bye. I don't hate to start it off with a complaint here, but there's a lot of teams on byes, and there's an early Sunday.
There's small slates, right? It's like it's small slate after small slate. It's just very, very different.
Yeah, and so we get an early Sunday morning game with the London game with the Vikings and the Browns, so have fun with that one, England. And then you get six teams on byes, and then we've said this on a number of podcasts, most people just know, but the Sunday night game for DraftKings is not available on the main slate as well, so you kind of knock off some of those Pittsburgh guys, and then you get a Monday night game. So we'll go through each of these games, break them down game by game, talk about some of the injury concerns we have here, talk about some of the movement in terms of price and maybe opportunity that we've seen from a couple different players over the last couple weeks that you can kind of maybe latch onto for some safety or for some upside for tournaments, and we'll kind of break it down that way. Buddy, does that sound good to you?
Buddy, that sounds amazing. Buddy.
Oh, I love it. Buddy. Buddy, your positivity abounds, man. I love it. All right, so we get a early Sunday morning game. At least on the East Coast, very early, I guess, on the West Coast, where Minnesota and Cleveland are playing in London. Looks like Stefon Diggs is going to be back and play in this game. He's been injured, though Bradford is not. So it's still going to be Keenum behind center, but Diggs is back. How does Thielen, someone tweeted at me that we've never pronounced Adam Thielen's name right, so now I'm in my head about whether it's Thielen or Thielen, and I actually just haven't looked up what the actual correct saying is, and I even watched the game last week and was like, I'm going to remember how to say that because this guy tweeted at me, and I still just can't remember. So whoever complained at me about on Twitter about that, sorry. I just, Adam, whatever your name is, Thielen. What do we do with his targets if we have a guy like Diggs back? He's been getting elite target share, but I'm not sure if that's been more related to just the fact that he's been the clear wide receiver one.
No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly the increase in targets has probably resulted from that on some level, but at 6,700, you know, in a pretty good matchup for a guy that's not gotten fewer than 8 targets all season long, I think his role is pretty secure, actually. So, yeah, you might not be picturing yourself tapping into some of the upside that might have been there when Diggs was out, but I don't think it's mattered. You know, fewest receptions on the season is 5. It just seems like he's got his role built into this offense, and you know, Diggs gives them a new axis to attack from, but I don't think it really cuts into Thielen too much.
Interesting. I did lower him a little bit. I still have him at 8.5 targets, though. So
yeah, that's fine.
I think that's still a solid target share number in a matchup that you really like here, because Cleveland is still just continues their, I don't know, seemingly never-ending stretch of just being a really, really bad team. That nothing has changed here. They're huge underdogs. Minnesota's -9.5. Other guys maybe to consider here, we talked briefly about this, I believe, on the recap. Latavius Murray saw a lot of carries last game, and we were never kind of sure who was going to take over the full Dalvin Cook role. It does seem like they've just kind of split it between him and McKinnon. He had a great game, though, 18 for 113 and a touchdown against a really bad Cleveland team. Could you see rostering Murray here at only 6,400?
I don't know. Maybe if it's a one game slate, I can see it. Like, just the fact that he had 18 and McKinnon had 14, you know, again, in the old absolute versus relative carries range, you like the absolute carries. 18 is great for a guy in this price range. But if it really comes down to him getting 1.25 the carries that McKinnon's going to get, or 1.3 the carries that McKinnon gets, I just don't know that there's always going to be 30 plus carries to spread around, you know. And this is actually a game where there could be. So, you know, especially going over to England and all the times that difference changes and how sluggish offenses have looked from time to time, there's definitely a possibility here, but it's not one I'm particularly excited about. Like, if they were on the main slate, I certainly wouldn't consider Murray at all.
Yeah, no, and I think that's where that's going to end up, is that this is not going to be a very popular slate, and this game is just going to kind of fall by the wayside fantasy-wise. DeShone Kizer is going to start for Cleveland, not like it that's matters. Amazing. He stunk. No matter who they bring in, they stink. They have just a severe quarterback issues. He's probably
not a single playable guy on the team.
He's probably the worst quarterback in the, I mean, the I think he's statistically the worst current quarterback in the league that's actually still gotten consistent snaps. So, all in all, pretty forgettable game. A couple of those, I think you can target a couple of those guys if you are playing that early Sunday morning slate. Let's go on to the main slate for Monday. Let's go to the main 1 o'clock slate for Sunday. First game, Indianapolis goes into Cincinnati. Cincinnati, huge favorite here, -10.5. I find them to be interesting fantasy-wise, and so does our system. It's going to be a little weird rostering, I think, some of these names. But on the Cincinnati side of the ball, okay, we have guys like Dalton and Green. I think those are pretty well-established just sure. names at this point. I think not to say that Green is great. Dalton is fine. I want to get to talk to him about his DraftKings price here in a second. But my first thought, we talked a little bit about him on Wednesday for our Cash Game podcast. Joe Mixon. Are you still kind of holding the same opinion about Mixon here? He's still very cheap on DraftKings, but in that price tier where we're usually looking to kind of make lineups, he does seem to be coming in a lot. And he's actually kind of getting close on FanDuel as well. How do you feel about the Mixon play?
I'm of two minds on it, I guess. I don't hate it on its face. Like, you construct, I think, a pretty good story about why everything that possibly could have gone wrong for them last week did. The whole team only had 14 carries. He had 7 of those. But obviously the game script was utterly not in their favor. I was looking at this more closely because I saw him getting close and just wondering if maybe he's the best play, you know, taking the presumed RB1 on a team that is favored by double-digit points. Like, can't be that bad, especially not one with a dynamic offense. Like, this is a team, they're favored by 10.5 points, but you don't run the Patriots' risk of maybe them winning by 30, right? Like, if anything normal happens, like maybe they get multiple defensive touchdowns or something, that could happen. But so from that perspective, I could see it. I mean, really on this team right now, I was looking at the snaps a little bit more closely, and really it's a snap share between him and Giovanni Bernard. And I think that's probably more where it is, and Hill comes in for some of the short yardage stuff. I think this is, we're kind of a snap share between Mixon and then the combo of Bernard and Hill, and it's a little weird because if you look at the actual snaps he's getting, it's basically every normal first and second down, and then Bernard comes in on a lot of third downs, except for when they get in short yardage situations, then they seem to give the ball to Hill, because Hill had very few snaps last week. I think he had 8 snaps, but 4 carries, and basically when Hill comes in, he kind of gets the ball. So it's really hard to say what his role would be in a game that were, you know, where they were winning by 10 going into the fourth quarter, let's say. I assume that he would get a significant number of carries, but I think like that 15 range that he showed against Buffalo is probably fair. And I'm just not sure that this offense is dynamic enough to support a $6,000 player on FanDuel at those prices, you know? I mean, it's going to come down to who else we are considering, as always, but on its face, I'm not overly excited just because we know that there are weeks that he's going to get 7 carries, you know, and so that's a hard pill to swallow. There's not a lot to dream on, I guess, you know, it's like you're kind of just hoping that he gets 12 fantasy points.
I'm with you. I'm with you, like in the damning with faint praise kind of thing here, like where it's that's kind of where I feel too. I'm making this number up sort of, but I feel like there was just 2 more games on this main slate. I think that Mixon would not be. Expanding the player pool just that much, I think, would have Mixon probably out of the conversation. It's just, I think you're just running out of options.
Yeah, that's
here.
Totally fair.
And you're running out of options, and you're really running out of options in the cheap side. There's just really no injury replacements coming in this week that are worth anything. There's just a lot of bad matchups.
That's a great point. Let's talk about that, because I think there's 2 kinds of cheap plays. There's a kind of cheap play that draws you in to a Stars and Scrubs sort of lineup, right? So like, you know, in the NBA, DJ Augustine the other night was the kind of play that was so excellent because he was coming in as a point guard and, you know, taking over the role, and we had an established baseline of what he was doing on a points per minute basis, and there was no competition for the job. And so he was the kind of play that draws you in to being like, oh, well, who are some expensive guys that I can play to kind of make sure I can get Augustine in the lineup and still use my whole salary? And then on the flip side, there were guys like, say, Shabazz Muhammad, who was also $3,000, the very minimum salary on FanDuel, but who was like a lot less exciting. But that was a night where the pricing was a lot closer, and actually there were expensive guys. It was a draw to them to get the security right of the expensive guys like LeBron James. And I think that Mixon is more in that Shabazz Muhammad category. He's not a cheap play that draws you into the Stars and Scrubs thing, but he's a cheap play you can stomach. We do this with wide receivers is the more common position. It's a cheap play that you can stomach that it would be difficult for him to completely crush you. And you're just going to have to understand that if you get 9 or 10 fantasy points, that the reason you played him was not to go off for 30. You know, like that wasn't the point. So, yeah, I think if you take it with that understanding and if you look at your lineup and that's the role he fills, he's not the big payoff. If Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell or one of these other guys is the payoff you get for Mixon, then I think it's worthwhile. Because in football, unlike other sports, a lot of times the big guys are actually payoffs on a raw points per dollar basis, which is kind of an unusual nuance to football.
Yeah, no, that's that you put it perfectly, I think, is that when you play Mixon, it's you're playing Mixon so you can play Julio Jones, let's say, on DraftKings, right? Like you're doing, this is the kind of thing that you're paying up for maybe safety in Carson Wentz, all guys that we're going to talk about later. Like there's, and on a week where you just, it's very difficult to find those kind of players and the pricing has gotten tighter, now all of a sudden you do kind of have to hold your nose at times. And then when you're holding your nose, you just want to take the guy that projects for, you know, 3 to 7 more touches than other guys in his kind of price tier. And I think that Mixon is in that category. Dalton and Green were two other guys we spoke about. Dalton's price is pretty low on DraftKings. I think he offers that sort of that same kind of price, not price inefficiency, but I wouldn't mind taking his price at 5,700 if I knew I was going to be able to buy a little bit more safety throughout the lineup that we talked about him on the cash games. And then AJ Green. Now, could you see a scenario that this is the most points we've ever seen the Bengals having? The Bengals are projected for the most points that they're going to probably put up all season. Can you see a scenario where you, because of the way they're priced, a three guy stack of Dalton, Mixon, and Green in this game? Like, is their offense concentrated enough where you could feel like that had upside?
Well, again, it's not quite like the Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Roethlisberger sort of concentration, correct, but it's a price thing, right? So, like, I do think Dalton and Green, totally worthwhile stack on DraftKings for sure on this short slate. And again, if you're just plugging Mixon in because he's a dude, it's just, like, independent of the fact that he happens to be on the same team as those other guys almost. Like, the bar is a lot lower, I guess, when the price is so much lower. So could you see throwing him into that basket with those two guys and ending up with a total basket of fantasy points that's a little higher? Absolutely. I do have concerns about that in a way that I don't with the Steelers, just because I don't know that Mixon is the goal line back. Now, Hill's been so ineffective, like just remarkably ineffective if you look at his game log, that maybe even he's shifting out of that role. Like, you know, you just go up and down the thing and it's like 4 carries for 7 yards, 4 for 16, 6 for 16, 7 for 23, 6 for 17. Like, the guy's been horrible. horrible. But Mixon's been no great shakes either. So it's a little tough to say. So only for that reason I don't think about it the same way. But and I just don't know that you get all the scoring by playing all three of those guys, right, is my only point here. Maybe Gio breaks off a 17-yard reception touchdown or whatever. Then I guess you get it from Dalton. But yeah, if you almost consider them as two separate entities, the Green, Dalton stack, and Mixon on his own, then yes, I can totally sign off on that.
And I think we can safely ignore most of the Indianapolis side of the ball. If you want to maybe play something in their passing game and think they're going to be playing catch-up, then go for that like kind of Brissett-Hilton combo deal. It's not something I'm going to want to do. I don't think there's
I'm going to be playing the passing game on the whole Colts offense, Doug. How about that?
All right, let's bang. Let's move on to Atlanta goes in to face the Jets. They're -4.5 going in the away game against New York. Atlanta struggled on offense a lot this season. They've shifted out of the offensive coordinator into a scheme that seems like people have not been all that enamored with, and it really hasn't really paid off at all because they just at times look kind of lost. And even for having most of the same personnel that they were bringing back from last year, I don't know if it's a Super Bowl hangover or what the hell's going on, but their offense is not clicking anywhere close to the near historic efficiency that they were putting up last season.
Oh no, and they haven't even had a tough schedule either. Like, they basically played the AFC East, Detroit, Green Bay, and Chicago. Like, that's not bad. Like, this is
they struggled to put up points against the arguably the worst defense in the league in the Pats, right? So I'm a little concerned that we are looking that at times, and I think Vegas maybe even is falling prey to this as well, is that we are transposing last year's Falcons team onto this year's team, and it just hasn't really been happening. And now, that being said, we did see finally some more targets come Julio Jones's way last week. Mohamed Sanu has been a guy that's been targeted. Where do you see how interested are you playing the Falcons here this week?
Yeah, I'm not super interested, I guess. I mean, the Jets play slow. Their defense is not terrible. They're kind of a middle of the road defense. Jones, he's getting into the territory where at these prices, like, I think there's a lot of people that have been flirting with Julio Jones this season. And unless you just look at last week in particular, you've been disappointed every single week. So he's not the big money receiver for me on FanDuel for sure. I could stomach it on DraftKings, I guess, just because there aren't really many other payoffs and there are some reasonable cheap guys. And I think, you know, given that Antonio Brown is just off the main slate there. You know, he becomes a little bit more palatable. I think Sanu is an interesting big tournament option, kind of quietly. You know, he sat out against Miami, but comes back against New England and drew a 20% target share. Didn't do a whole lot with it, but the potential is at least there. And you don't really see that level of target share on a guy who costs 5,600. So I think he's somewhat interesting, kind of in the Joe Mixon category, actually, for me. Of if he shows up in the lineup, I won't X him out and feel disgusted, but I'll just kind of be like, eh, whatever, like, catch a touchdown, please, or something.
Right. You know? Well, he's the kind of guy on FanDuel, at least, where there are a couple ways to go lower middle tier wide receiver that does help you stack Bell and Brown together this week, and that's Sanu checks that box for me there. If the price I need to pay to play Le'Veon Bell, right, like a really and Brown together, like just pretty expensive prices, is Mohamed Sanu, then I'm like the difference between playing him and like. I'm trying to think of a cheap guy like Ricardo Lewis one week, you know, or something like that, or like Rashard Higgins, guys that like we've kind of stomached or, you know, thought that they might see both Browns guys, obviously, but that we thought they'd see some targets and then it kind of just didn't work out. Sanu isn't in that same category. He's an established guy that doesn't have a tremendous amount of upside, but it's hard to imagine him completely disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a pretty good way to sum it up. Also in this game, like if you're going to peek over on the Jets side of the ball, Austin Seferian Jenkins, touchdowns in three straight weeks, getting a little expensive on just his overall usage. But I'm actually probably a little bit more of a believer in the role he had before the Miami game. You know, 5 catches, 4, 6, and then 8 in the 4 games prior to that. I think he's still a reasonable option. You know, I really haven't, dug into why I would need to play him or where, but he's another guy that if he fell in to my lineups for some reason that I wouldn't be devastated here.
Yeah, now Robbie Anderson, one more guy that I think I would possibly consider as a downfield threat, especially on FanDuel where he's only 5,800 as well. He kind of is not in that same price tier as Sanu, not the same exact kind of guy. He needs to catch long touchdowns really to hit value. But so if I were comparing the two in terms of like GPP or cash game, like Sanu would be more of a cash game type play for me, and Anderson would be. I do think at that price there is upside for him, especially in a game where the Jets are likely playing catch up against an Atlanta team that's just not all that good on defense. Chicago goes into New Orleans. New Orleans is -9 favorites going into the game. We talked a lot about Mark Ingram on the Cash Game podcast the other day in terms of just sort of the perfect consummate cash game play. Really, there's really no other. Like he's every single box you want to check about what you need for a running back. Home favorite, gets a lot of touches. Ingram's there, so that we have no reason to go too far back into that one. Yeah, if this had been his production level, like if he had started the year with this, he would be an $8,500 or more running back. He'd be in that Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley kind of range of just pricing, and he just the fact that it's been a sort of a new role hasn't gotten him there. So he's 100% lock for me in cash games. Any other guys on the Saints side of the ball that you're considering?
Michael Thomas, I guess, remains interesting only because the price has gone down a bit. Obviously, the production has been pretty lackluster the last couple of weeks, but I did like to see him rise back to his highest target percentage of the year last week against Green Bay. He obviously took a game off against Detroit basically before going back into that role at Green Bay, but that Detroit game was just so nuts, like for so many reasons. Breeze was also terrible in a 52-point performance for them there, so I don't put too much stock in that. I actually think Thomas is really close to just being an excellent value in a vacuum here. Maybe it's not the week to play it just because there's so many constraints on salary, and actually that tends to almost affect the guys in the middle the most. You can only get so many guys in that $7,000 to $8,000 range just because you have to play your kind of must play expensive guys, which necessitates punts. And you have guys like Ingram that are just elite middle of the road plays. You kind of have to play a middle of the road quarterback, you know. So I could see Thomas being an odd man out, but just in a vacuum, I really like Thomas this week.
Yeah, no, I like him as well, and I do think he is Breeze's clear target. I thought there would be some more of a target share with Snead coming back, but that really hasn't panned out. Really, he hasn't really. I think he's barely even taken the field. Ted Ginn's kind of been around Brandon Coleman. They have some other guys and weapons that they go to, and they do throw Kamara a lot out of the backfield. But I still like Thomas as that wide receiver one guy. And I think that because I think the ownership on Ingram will be very high, I do find the Thomas pivot, a Breeze Thomas stack where you don't play Ingram in this case, is actually, I think, a lot of upside for GBPs because you were going to simultaneously go against the chalk while also like you'll mitigate anything that Ingram would have done to hurt you by just, theoretically getting the scoring on Breeze and Thomas. So I think that's a really nice GBP pivot. I don't think I would stack them all together in cash because I don't think you can do it price-wise. But yeah, the Saints guys do strike me as interesting. Chicago, Trubisky threw 7 total passes last week. Yeah, I feel like he's going to have to throw more this week if they have any chance. I don't see how they have a ton of chance. Saints have been kind of surprisingly, I mean, you know, for a long time, the Saints have been maligned as just being one of the worst defenses in the league. That's just like not the case this season. They're especially been good against the pass. Mm-hmm. They rank 6th in DVOA against the pass. They've been much worse against the run, where they rank 29th. But 15th, you know, when you put it all together, they're 15th in DVOA for a team that has really trended toward the 30s range for the last, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 years. You know, when you see a team like this where they just can't, where they do struggle to defend the run, does it give you any more interest in a guy like Jordan Howard, even as a big underdog?
Yeah, I wouldn't, and I wouldn't malign the Saints' passing defense too much. Just to, for my money, like you know, the yards per attempt they've allowed is 7.4, which is a bottom 10 figure in the league. But again, the who are the Bears going to pass to? They just don't know how to pass the ball. So, and I think the Bears, you know, when they go into any given game, their hope is, you know, maybe can we luck box into multiple defensive touchdowns? No? Okay. Well, we'll give the ball to Howard 40 times and see what can happen. It's just going to be hard for them. You know, if they're trailing in this game, it's not going to be like their last game where they were able to pass the ball 7 times. That being said, Howard is just such the plan, especially in the first half. And on this price point, that I think he's a really strong play. And actually, you know, he's almost an argument. And the $1,000 makes a difference for sure, but he's an argument against playing Mixon, I think, because he's kind of like, for $1,000 more, an incredibly rich man's Joe Mixon to me, right? Like a guy who doesn't have upside of 20 touches if things break right. He's got an upside of 40 touches if things break right. And that's really, I think, worth something. So, I think Howard is a value. I think you'll see him at some point this season in a winning big tournament lineup. Like the DraftKings million, FanDuel million, something like that. And this week, you know, if they do get up on the Saints, this could be the week. Absolutely. I mean, the Saints play fast enough. They are pass reliant enough that there could be a lot of possessions to go around this game. And yeah, I think Howard's very interesting here.
And Chicago actually has run the ball when they've been down because they're so bad at passing that they just kind of have to, right? Like they've now that was a little bit more with Mike Glennon, but Trubisky's
they're not going to get better if it's Trubisky, at least not yet.
It is interesting. Like they stick to the ground game a little more than most other teams would, simply because they recognize that it's still their best option, even though albeit not a very good one. All right, Carolina goes into Tampa Bay. We talked about Cam. I'm still kind of loosely into wanting to play Cam here this week, even though I'm one of the biggest Cam haters around in terms of just like rostering him on a week-to-week basis and think he's completely overrated. I still actually do kind of like the matchup here. So we mentioned him on the Cash Game podcast, though significantly behind Wentz in terms of safety. Other guys in Carolina, we've seen still tons of targets for Christian McCaffrey. He cannot run the ball between the tackles at all. They're still concentrating on Jonathan Stewart there, but the guy just gets so many targets. The price is sort of in that mid-tier. Anyone out here on Carolina you like?
Yeah, I think no. besides Cam, I guess. Like, there are cases you can make. Listen, for some of these other guys, you know, Benjamin, I think he's another guy with the level of upside that you're looking for on that price point, especially for big tournaments, and especially as part of a Cam stack. You know, when it does click for him, like he can go off for a lot of yards per catch and occasionally can get a lot of catches. And if there's a week where he has the perfect storm and combines those two, like he almost started showing that against Philly. He showed one part against Philly, the catches, and one part against New England, the yards per catch. But if he can go for 9 catches at average 20 yards per catch, there aren't a lot of receivers at this price point that have that level of upside. So I think Benjamin's definitely an upside consideration. I don't think the safety is anywhere near where you would want. Ed Dixon, you know, has shown some consistency out of the tight end position, had the huge week against Detroit, and otherwise kind of been, I don't know, Austin Seferian Jenkins light, which is not really saying very much, I guess. But, you know, this just isn't a team with a lot of great firepower, a lot of great punch. Even McCaffrey getting the targets, he hasn't really turned that into phenomenal production.
Definitely not for his price. I think he started the season too high, like priced probably a little too high, and they just haven't run him the ball enough. He's effectively like a wide receiver that will get carries from time to time. He's far and away the target leader for running backs. He has 59 targets this year. The next closest guy is James White at 47.
So. Yeah, that is actually pretty interesting. You know, looking more closely at these numbers on FanDuel, I mean, it's a little tricky because it's somewhat touchdown dependent, and I don't think you can count on him for receiving touchdowns. But if you look over the last 3 weeks, you'd be moderately happy with that average performance. So, yeah, maybe it's a thing. I don't know.
Jonathan Stewart.
It just seems like we've been down that road before, you know, like Darren Sproles. There are guys who can get a lot of targets out of the backfield and still have difficulty making it work. Because I think the siren song you wind up running into in a situation like this is, like, take a guy like Jarvis Landry. Actually, his targets and yards per catch look similar on its surface, but Jarvis Landry actually has a significantly better yards per catch. And a guy like McCaffrey, 7 receptions sounds great, but 36 yards on 7 reception is just nothing. And if he's going to get 4 carries, like, if you had... you would never pencil in $6,300 worth of salary for that. So lots of upside, but yeah, I don't think you can just run with it just yet.
Jonathan Stewart's only $3,600 on DraftKings. He is in that 14 carries a game. They never throw the ball to him. So really what you're buying there is a goal line carry. But although he even gets sniped on that because Cam...
No touchdowns.
Right, because Cam ends up being kind of their goal line back. But
it's,
you know,
too close, right?
14, but it's really just that you're paying just rock bottom prices for him at this point. Like, so if very little needs to happen for him to hit value, but he still actually struggled to hit value. But no other guy in that price range touches the ball that many times. So unexciting, though, cheap option that you can look at. Tampa Bay side, you know, not a bad matchup. They are favored here. Their projected points are kind of up there. I mean, Jameis has been dealing with some injury issues. Doug Martin's a guy that they seem committed to running the ball with. He just hasn't been very good. I was looking at his, he carried the ball 20 times last game. He just hasn't really been able to do much on the ground. Anything you like here on the Tampa Bay side?
I don't know. I mean, Mike Evans continues to be an interesting big tournament option, I guess. Tampa Bay doesn't really excite me generally just because production in every facet of the game for them is so erratic. You know, Evans, he continues to be a guy that is priced too high to consider in cash games. But if it clicks and he gets 2 touchdowns or whatever, he's definitely a guy that will be in a winning GPP lineup, not can be, by the end of the season. So definitely something to consider there. Cameron Brate just remains in kind of the cheap enough category for tight ends, and the performance has actually just really been there in the last 5 weeks, really. So a lot of that's touchdown dependent, but hey, if he's a red zone target for them, then he's a red zone target for us too. You know, touchdowns aren't definitely not all luck, which is not something that we've really harped on very much this season, but is very much a reality. Like, there are some guys who are just more predisposed to get touchdowns than others, and based on Brate's red zone usage, I would definitely put him in that category. But after that, yeah, Doug Martin just doesn't excite me very much.
I don't mind Martin. I do think there's a scenario in which they are up and their implied total is high enough that I think that they, you know, there are expected to have points put up in this game, and I think there is a scenario I could see Doug Martin having a big game in this. Like, there's a script that works out for them where they get up early, and then they've shown that they want to run him the ball as just like kind of their lead back, and he'll catch a pass or two as well. So I think there are scenarios.
So he goes for 20 carries for 49 yards.
He's not very good. He's not. I'm not.
14 for 53 against her.
I'm not making the Doug Martin is good case. I'm making the Doug Martin has upside case. Like, that there's scenarios that work for him, because again, there's so many teams where they just don't even have a running back that they're willing to, like, use, right? And so, like, if you start going down the list of teams where you can say that a team would be willing to go 20 plus touches with a guy, I mean, there's, especially on this slate, there's like 7 teams total for running backs, and Martin is one of those guys. I'm kind of making that 7 number up. I might be wrong, but it's not, I can't imagine it's very much higher. So he's just kind of in that category for me. And I think that if they were to get up early, I think that there is upside in him, and I'm not really making the Doug Martin case. All right, before we hit some more of these games up, give us a sponsor.
Sure, I'd like to talk about FantasyFactor.com. It's a great place to go to play the salary cap games that you're used to without the competition of the huge sharks coming in and gobbling up all of your winnings. Really perfect for people playing between $5 and $100, say, per weekend. And this weekend, they have another excellent NFL free roll that you can go check out, $500 free roll. Go in there and try to get your share of things. Typically, they're plenty of money to go around and very, very reasonable to get your hands on it. Great way to start building a bankroll over there and playing routinely. So FantasyFactor.com, go check them out.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. We have the Chargers going in and playing the Patriots. The Patriots -7.5 favorites. They continue the running back carousel where we saw Rex Burkhead get into the action. Deion Lewis has gotten runs. Does seem like, yeah, James White. Mike Gillisley seems like he's on the way out, but we've been down this road before where we get fooled. They just are smart with the running backs. Like, they do the opposite of what dumb teams do, which is like just run all their guys or one specific guy into the ground. That guy's
running enough that he demands a huge contract. I think that's actually another big one too.
That's actually, yeah, good point. I didn't even think about that one. That's probably even more of the reason Belichick. So sinister. So what do we do with a team like New England? Gronk's price has dropped a little bit, actually. Hogan's still getting targets. What do you like on that side of the ball?
Yeah, Gronk, I think, is interesting. Just mostly because of the upside is just on an order totally unlike any other tight end that exists. I think he's a little bit, I mean, he's clearly overpriced for cash game considerations. Like, you'll never pay $8,400 for him rather than play, like, I don't know, Antonio Brown or even Julio Jones or really any of these guys. So he's just more of a nod for cash game purposes. I do think Brady is interesting. It's kind of like that standalone naked QB. We've seen several really good weeks out of him in the past, although it hasn't really come to fruition in the last couple weeks as well. Kind of expensive, but you know, in this game he could absolutely just put up a monstrous total here. I think you got to ignore the running back situation altogether, and I think Brandon Cooks is probably the guy you want to look at for the passing game, but the consistency really hasn't been there to support an $8,000 price tag. Like, you know, again, to compare him to other guys on the slate, because you probably can't play more than one wide receiver in this price range, I'd always rather take Michael Thomas. So to me, it looks like the Patriots have a lot of bridesmaids. No brides for me.
See, it's interesting about Gronk, at least on DraftKings, where we have him, so we have him projected for like right around the same amount of points as guys like Jones and AJ Green, right? Mm-hmm. But, and you would think like, oh, he's $1,200 cheaper, so why wouldn't he be in lineups like where you get the price savings? The problem is the Gronk issue is that it's not really about Gronk. It's that all the rest of the position is so cheap that you the percentage by which it's cheaper is much more than the wide receivers are cheaper, let's say. So like that is like it's a place where you're forced to save. You're forced to save all the time on tight ends, and that's actually what lowers Gronk's ownership. That's why I love him for GBP plays, because it's so hard to stomach paying that much when you look at that list of tight ends, like the Jenkins, the Henrys, all these guys really are just the Brates. Like, they're all $4,500 or less. And so when you have this huge group of guys, you're like, well, why the hell would I ever pay $7,100 for a Gronk? Even though, again, he's projected for right around the same points as these wide receiver ones. So it's an interesting math problem over on DraftKings. That's really all it comes down to. It's not a projection issue, I don't think, with Gronk. It's just that he just happens to, if they tomorrow moved him to wide receiver, he'd be in 100% of our lineups, which is crazy to think that it's just like that one position makes a difference, but that seems to be the case. Charger side of the ball, and we mentioned Keenan Allen as an option here for cash games, is just a heavily targeted guy. What about Melvin Gordon? It playing presumably from behind, but they've used him a lot in the passing game as well. Anything else you like here on the Chargers?
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about Gordon just due to the foot thing he's dealing with right now. He was limited on Wednesday's practice. I think he's going to play, but we have seen Gordon be a kind of a touchy guy in the past who can kind of come and go. When he's on, the workload is utterly there. We've saw back-to-back incredible weeks against the Giants in Oakland before taking a pretty understandable week off against Denver, but even then he got 22 touches. So I think he's definitely, you know, a cash game viable running back. I don't know that that's where people will wind up, because again, I just don't know that the math winds up shaking out that way. And obviously taking on the additional risk of the foot injury is on a short slate sometimes a risk you need to take, but I don't know that it's a risk you need to take for this one. The more interesting guy for me actually in this game on that side of the ball is Keenan Allen. I think Keenan Allen was a guy that was kind of constantly on the cusp of breaking out into being a pretty solid play. Gets the league's best matchup with the Patriots, who have had the worst passing offense in the league. And if you compare that to last week's matchup against Denver with the best passing defense in the league, I said passing offense for the Pats, I meant the worst passing defense in the league, then I think you can take a really hard look at Allen here. Yeah, they increased his price to account for the matchup, I suppose, but I think he's on the cusp of a big game. And I don't know that he'll be a $7,800 wide receiver going forward in an average matchup, but I think in a matchup like this, you could absolutely see that being a pretty good value.
Yep, no, I totally agree. And then they have a couple other receivers. We mentioned Hunter Henry as a cash game option. And then I think you have some other downfield receivers that you can take a stab on, I think, especially if they're playing from behind, Benjamin Williams, guys like that, but not guys that I'm going to be targeting in any kind of safe contest. San Francisco goes into Philly. They're the biggest underdog of the week. Philly's -13 favorites to start. We talked a lot about Carson Wentz as an option. We also talked a lot on the cash game podcast about Ertz as well. I'm wondering, there was a new note that came out of Philadelphia, and I can't find it right now, but there's that they would consider benching Wentz in the second half if they were winning by a lot. Now, it seems presumptuous, especially like, in the current state of the NFL, the way like to kind of say something like that. So I'm not sure if that came from a reporter or from the team itself. Would you be concerned at all? I guess my only concern here is, are you concerned with Wentz on the blowout side of the ball for a team that they should wax?
Yeah, I think so. I think Wentz just establishing himself as probably a – you know, it's interesting this time of year. You can see guys who are overpriced based on early season assumptions, and then you can see guys that are underpriced based on early season assumptions. And I think Wentz is in that underpriced category. Three straight weeks where we'd be thrilled with him on this price. And to back that up with two other weeks, we'd be very happy with him early in the season. I think Wentz is just a terrific play. And I don't think he's really susceptible to blowout concerns in the same way that some other quarterbacks are, because the Eagles just don't really have a running game that should cause him problems. You know, a fair amount of the running game is just him making short passes to running backs. So I think Wentz is a phenomenal play and a really, really good cash game inclusion.
Other guys, you know, if you thought they were just going to kind of ground and pound with a guy like LeGarrette Blount, I think there's some upside on him, especially near the end zone. And Alshon Jeffrey, I think still he's not a wide receiver one by any stretch of the imagination, but he is the second most targeted guy after Ertz. So if you thought that was going to be a way to pivot maybe off of Ertz's ownership, if you thought he was going to be a little higher, I don't mind going the Jeffrey route here as well. All right, keep it rolling. Oakland goes into Buffalo. We talked a lot about Amari Cooper the other day, about how, you know, we saw his target share going. Buffalo are slight favorites here at home. I don't think we need to totally revisit the Cooper thing because we kind of talked about it on two separate podcasts, so just go and listen to that. They are going to be, I believe, without Marshawn Lynch this week. How do you see, you know, do you see the Oakland run game shaking out in any way that you want to be part of it, like DeAndre Washington possibly, and then anything you like on this Buffalo side of the ball?
Yeah, there should be some opportunity there in Oakland. It's kind of tough to say exactly where that's going to go right now. We saw basically Washington get 9 carries for, you know, pretty unimpressive yardage total last week. We did see him get a goal line carry, which was pretty heartwarming. But we saw Jalen Richard also split opportunity there, almost, you know, strictly down the same line as him. And I think that they're both, it's just so hard to say where that's going to settle. And while it's very cheap, and I think the person who guesses correct, like if they decide to go with an RB1, the person who guesses correctly in that situation could just wind up winning a GPP with it. So, you know, good luck if that's you. Unless we get some definitive news either way, I don't think I'm going to take a risk like that in my cash games. I'm interested in LeSean McCoy, though, the running back on the other team. He's just been quietly one of the steadiest opportunity guys in the whole NFL this season, and finally followed that up his unlucky touchdownless streak. Like we've talked about guys who don't get touchdowns because that's just the game script. It hasn't really, or the team's plan. That's not really the case with McCoy. It seemed more like a bad luck situation. And him punching in 2 touchdowns last week to go with 122 total yards showed you what kind of upside he has. So still potentially, I mean, he's kind of just fairly priced, so it's not super, super exciting, but at least a guy to keep an eye on for me. And then, you know, outside of the running backs, though, it gets a little dicey for me outside of Cooper. Is there someone else you're seeing here that you're interested in?
Nah, not really interested in the running, in any of the wide receivers at all. I don't think so. I think that the Cooper thing, I think he's going to be helpful. I mean, the Crabtree thing is interesting because Cooper's going to be so much higher owned than him that if you think that, like, something were to shift or they were to play a matchup.
In 3 straight weeks?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that would be the case. That's more the case for Crabtree, is that his ownership's going to be not zero, but it's going to be so much less than Cooper for a guy that we have seen targeted well in the red zone in the past, that I think that would be the case really for playing him there. And then Buffalo receiving game, no thanks. 4 o'clock game.
Deontay Thompson, by the way, just to throw him out there, only had 21 snaps, but did have a 19% target share and had 107 receiving yards. I think if you're going to play him, it's kind of on a hope and a prayer, just because, you know, for a guy who played 7 snaps against Minnesota and then 21 last week, maybe they increase that. He's 4,900. There are scenarios in which he puts up a total, but yeah, don't see that number last week and start just extrapolating right away. The 21 snaps is really the number to key in on there, and understand that it's really hard to put up 100 yards through the air on 20 snaps. So.
Okay, moving into the 4 o'clock games, the first one we have here is Houston goes into Seattle. Houston is coming off the bye week. Obviously, Deshaun Watson was a fantasy darling to kind of start the season after he didn't start the first game, and then basically after that has been about as good of a fantasy quarterback as you can have. He's not a guy that's actually showing up very high in our system right now. They actually are underdogs, and the overall scoring looks to be a little on the low side to me. Seattle is -5.5 favorites here. You know, let's start with the Houston side, not a team that I've kind of thought a lot about, although we've thought a lot about in the past because we played guys like Hopkins, Watson, well, specifically those two guys. Is this just the wrong kind of matchup in, you know, if they're off the bye, but they're, you know, away against Seattle? Where do you see Houston kind of coming in for you?
Yeah, I think that they're basically an interesting big tournament option. Very interesting from that regard. I think, you know, the Watson-Hopkins stack will be one that's heavily tried this week. But I think it's just, again, it's like just not quite the right value. You know, it's not quite the right way in my mind to spend $18,000 worth of your salary on FanDuel just because there are other guys in those same price range that I like just a little bit more. And Seattle's just enough of a worse matchup than, you know, Wentz against the 49ers or whatever. And I think if I'm going to pay up for Antonio Brown at wide receiver, that's not going to leave very much money to spread around. So I don't see myself playing them for cash, but yeah, perfectly fine plays. You know, I don't hate anything about those guys. It's just not probably quite right for cash games.
What about Seattle? I mean, this has kind of been only the Russell Wilson show. He's the running back situation seems to be like a total mess, but does he fit the same category for you as like, I'm trying to think, I mean, kind of like Watson, but not exactly. He kind of just has to, more like Cam, I guess. Like he just kind of got to have to be involved in anything that they do to be able to put up points. You know, if you look at a guy like Wilson, as opposed, I'll compare him to Cam in this situation, because I do find them to be very similar and they're right around the same price on FanDuel. They're $100 difference. Would you rather play Wilson in maybe possibly a worse defensive matchup because you just like, to think the skill is better? Like, how would you compare those two guys?
Oh yeah, the skill is significantly better. I mean, what we can do, you can figure this problem out, I think, pretty easily by when you start to talk like and say things like, this guy will be their whole offense in a lot of games. You can actually just see what that looks like, you know. So you go down Wilson's game log and you can see he's got a 26 fantasy point performance, a 30 fantasy point performance, and a 34 fantasy point performance. And then you can go down Cam's game log and you can compare the two. And I think, you know, it'd be pretty tough to make a case that Wilson is the worst of the two, right? I mean, Cam has a 34-point game, but he's also got a 24 and a 26 as his next two best options. And so I think Wilson represents a little bit more safety and potentially a little bit more ceiling in an average matchup. But then when you go down to the actual matchups themselves, maybe it makes it a little closer. So in my mind, Wilson and Cam are pretty close this week. And both, again, close in the sense that I won't play either for cash games, but would be happy with either in big tournaments. So I do think, well, if you're going to pick one for cash games, I know that we're projecting Newton for slightly higher score. I think Wilson is the slightly safer option in spite of the worst matchup.
Yeah, it was close for me. Then when I was writing those two guys up, I kind of went back and forth, and I just kind of deferred to where our system had Cam. And I think that was just a little bit more on the rushing side that he was picking up a point over Wilson. Though, again, Wilson's is that kind of quarterback as well.
It's a much better matchup. Like I probably underemphasize that. Like Tampa Bay has the fourth worst, I should say, yards per attempt allowed this season, and the fourth highest number of passing yards given up. So if you're looking at a team that just, and Houston's just been good. So if you're looking at both of those teams, the matchup is significantly better for Newton. There's no doubt about it. It's just a question of if the consistency is there, and it's just not in my mind.
Dallas goes in and plays Washington. Ezekiel Elliott coming off a huge week last week. Dallas -1.5 favorites against the Redskins here. You know, the system's not as high this week on Zeke, mostly just because the matchup is just, you know, slightly worse. But he's priced close enough to Bell that I think you'd rather go Le'Veon here. But do you think people play Zeke? Like, I'm interested. What do you think about where the ownership levels come in on a guy like Elliott as compared to Bell, especially considering the kind of week that he's coming off of?
Yeah, that'll be a good question. I think Elliott will be probably higher owned. You know, just kind of the weeks like that just don't go unnoticed. He was highly owned and amazing. The matchups are almost identical this week. Detroit has given up 566 rushing yards. Washington has given up 567 rushing yards so far this season. So, you know, in terms of, and then, you know, obviously just raw rushing totals aren't always the best way to measure that sort of thing, but it's close enough to where I think, you know, it's not too big of a material difference. And so I think you're just looking at skill set and opportunity. And listen, I think Ezekiel Elliott's great. He's a really, really, really good running back. And there's a lot of reason to be very excited about him. But the difference between the two, and Elliott is probably a whole tier above the next tier. But Bell's opportunity is just so elite. We talked about this in the Cash Game podcast, and we don't need to rehash it all now, but he's basically like a whole game ahead of the next, right. The next, you know, most used guys, and that's just worth too much in my mind. Like, yeah, Elliott's gonna have weeks where he's gonna have 29 touches, 30 touches. That's great. Bell's gonna have weeks where he's 39, and that just means so much when you're so good on a per touch basis. That really starts to add up. And I think in a bigger week, like if we had some really good cheap wide receiver options, or even a lot of those middling wide receiver options, and maybe a really cheap tight end we liked, then maybe we could even go two-headed monster at running back. But I just don't know that Elliott quite makes the cut by our standards, but I imagine for a lot of people, he's going to be a very, very heavily owned.
Dallas is actually sneaky bad against the run this year. They rank 31st in DVOA, and it's just a shame because Washington just doesn't have, they have no clue what's going on with the running back. I wish they would just like make Chris Thompson the running back and just say, like, yeah. you're the, I don't know if he just doesn't profile that way or whatever the reason is, because they just continue to go with, you know, P. Ryan and Kelly and these guys that just can't really do anything. And then Thompson has been very effective, more through the air than anything else. But I wish they would just kind of, I wish they just had a running back in the situation, is really because Dallas is not good, just so bad against the run this season. But they just don't, so you really can't target that ground game. And then the passing game has been, you know, we thought I'm taking still taking the L on Terrell Pryor. That just hasn't worked out the way I thought it would. And then, you know, guys like Jordan Reed still kind of coming cheap, but he's been playing a little bit banged up this season. So Washington is one of those teams where even when they're projected to put up points, it's kind of, it is hard to hone in exactly where it's going to come from. 8:30 game, Pittsburgh and Detroit. We talked so much about Bell and Brown at this point that I don't know if it's worth to keep going here. There's just going to be, if not both of them on FanDuel, at least one of them in all of our cash games. And it's a little bit of a, you can't do it at all in DraftKings, so forget about it. But for FanDuel, I think we'll probably end up there with them as a slight road favorite, having both of those guys in, just because the floor is so much higher. Detroit side is interesting, though. The looks like Golden Tate's not going to play, and that is going to open up a lot of targets on the Detroit side of the ball, possibly in a game where they're coming from behind. Now, Pittsburgh's a good defense. They rank second in DVOA right now, second overall against the pass, which I actually find pretty surprising. I did not think they were going to be this good against the pass this season. Marvin Jones, he had 14 targets last week in the game where Tate went down. Do we just kind of like, man, I hate the pencil in. You can't put 14 targets for a guy. But, I mean, where do we set Marvin Jones's target share going right now? He doesn't really profile as your typical possession kind of receiver. He's small. He's been a downfield guy. But where do you think we should set? I'll tell you where I did, and then where do you think?
Well, I have a number in my mind.
Okay, right.
Number's 10.
Okay, yeah, so then we're low because I think I had it like at 8.5 or something like that.
So you did 8 the week before, and I think that this is a case where we have the example from last week. I think actually Jones, he was a guy I was just been sitting here stewing, waiting all day to talk about, because I'm actually super excited. I think he actually unlocks so much in the cash games when you start to see him coming into lineups, and it's just all makes sense to me. I think he'll be relatively highly owned, so you don't take as much of a risk sticking your neck out for him. He's had the red zone usage all season. He has a couple bad games against Minnesota and Atlanta. It's not a sure thing at all, but I think the last 2 weeks, those targets trending up in a pretty tough matchup against Carolina, and then last week against New Orleans, there's definitely some chance that it's just they had no other plan. They were like, well, we were just going to pass to Tate. Like, no one else even has their pads on. So Jones, get out there, buddy. We got to pass you the ball. That's totally in play to me. But I just think that, you know, especially primetime game, I think that's generally kind of overrated. But I think it does pressure teams, in my, you know, just layman's eyeball test mentality, to try to do more than just run the ball every single time. And I think Jones will settle in at around 10 targets. And again, I think he'll be highly enough owned, based on last week's probably outlier performance, that you're not taking on that much risk. So I do like that as a great enabler for our big payoff guys.
I take it back. I did have him at 10. So we're on the same page. I had thought it was 8.5, and then I went back and looked, and I have him at 10. Now, I will say this matchup is not good. He's going to draw Joe Hayden here, and really across the board, the Pittsburgh cornerbacks really rate out so highly. I mean, I'm looking at like just some rating systems for quarterbacks, that this is not a good matchup for Jones. So I need to like temper the expectation on that a little bit. So that being said, for 6,100 in at least on FanDuel, you're really not going to see the expectation of even like high eights targets for a guy in this price range. And so I think that in this case, the targets and the price are going to outstrip the downside you're going
to
get. That
just compare him to Sanu. Sanu is 500 less. And
oh, Jones all day. It's not close.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And I think it's a pretty easy one, actually. And agree, there's tons of concerns, and he could not be good. But if he's 40% owned or something, it just hurts you so much less than taking an outlier guy like Sanu at 7% owned, you know. So
I think he's a clear chalk play. I was mostly just saying, like, just keep in mind that it is a little closer than it would be in almost any other matchup, because this is a very bad matchup. Denver goes into KC for the Monday night game. I feel like KC's like never played. Has KC played on like the main slate at all this season? I feel
your brother-in-law, KC.
Yeah, I think that's the Kansas City Chiefs. Have they ever played? The Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay,
have they ever played? It doesn't feel like they've ever played in the main slate of games, right? Like, they play Thursday, they play Sunday nights, they play Monday. Yeah. like, I got to go back and look, but of the, this is the eighth week. I bet you at least half the weeks, it might even be more, that they have not been available in some fashion on the main slate of games. I feel like we're never talking about them there. So you're going to get them on the primetime slate. Denver's a very good defense. Denver's also looked awful on offense. I don't know. Where does this game fall for you? Like, sometimes I want to play these primetime slates. I could see some points getting put up here. This is not one that completely excites me, though.
Nah, not excited at all. I don't really like Denver. I guess I remain lukewarm on Demaryius Thomas just based on what I think his opportunity will shake out as. I'm not going to play the even like if this were on, I mean, even on a small slate, it's really hard to imagine playing multiple guys on an offense against Denver. Like, that just doesn't seem like any way to make a dollar in this game. So, yeah, this is a week where I'm happy to see KC on this slate and Denver. Just get rid of Denver. Get him out of here. No offense, great defense. Like, just such a sink for DFS purposes, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think I could see Kansas City putting up some points. I do think they're still a little bit overrated because of their hot season start to begin the season. But I'm prepared to be wrong about that as well. All right, dfsr.com/NBA, whatever way that slash goes.
Forward slash NBA.
No wonder we would drive twice more sales if I just said that correctly on the podcast.
Make sure your shift came out over your enter
key. All right, go over there, sign up for a free 3-day trial for our projection system. It's going to show you all the numbers that we've been talking about here, breaking down NFL. Go there for NBA as well. Go check out our player lab for both of those sports. People have been loving the leaderboards. Really all the stuff that we're offering to get you started and keep winning for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. And also make sure you check out our basketball podcast that we're recording three or four days a week, same days we're recording the NFL podcast as well. NBA been crushing to start the season, looking to keep that going. All right, buddy, enjoy your Sunday with football. Talk to you next week when we recap the week that was.
Can't wait.